Vanderkamp insisted on taking his own car to the morgue. Jesse had no issue with that, but when he got outside the station, he got a hint of what Paradise had coming. There were 20 vehicles, everything from pickups to 4x4s, to classic Mustangs and beat-up Buicks, lined up behind Vanderkamp's 5-year-old Garnet Chevy Silverado. The vehicles had plates from all over the country, and many of the vehicles had flags, all snapping in the autumn wind blowing in hard off the Atlantic, attached to small plastic poles clipped to their rear door windows. The pickups had bigger flags on long poles, attached to the sidewalls of their cargo boxes. Some of the flags were American flags. Others were the flags of the Saviors of Society, curved swastikas et al. But there were a few flags in particular that caught Jesse's eye. These featured bold black block lettering against a field of bright red. Aryan Lives Matter. Mourn Our Martyr. Punish His Racist Executioner. Jesse knew that technology enabled you to get almost anything printed almost immediately, but he was skeptical. It had been less than 12 hours since the incident in Newton Alley. Everything, even the way the father had acted in his office, felt choreographed. It seemed that a spectacle was to be made of the younger Vanderkamp shooting. Jesse was further convinced of the father's intentions when he noticed that the last vehicle in the motorcade was a satellite news truck. Vanderkamp meant to make a campaign out of his son's death. Before the elder Vanderkamp could close the passenger door of his pickup, Jesse stopped him. "Listen, you want to use your son's death for your purposes, I can't stop you."
"Damn right you can't."
"But let's be clear. You do it within the law."
"Within the law?" Vanderkamp sneered at Jesse. "Was your officer acting within the law when she murdered my boy?"
"Save your speeches for them," Jesse said, pointing at the cars behind the pickup. "Spread the word for them to put their headlights on, and I don't want to hear horns blowing in town, especially not near the morgue. You want to make theater out of this? Fine. But other families have lost loved ones, too. Families without agendas. Understood?" Vanderkamp didn't answer Jesse, but turned to his driver.
"James Earl, go do as Chief Stone says."
Jesse looked past Vanderkamp at the driver, hoping the man might be the soldier he'd been searching for. No luck. The driver was a younger version of Vanderkamp, probably another son. He was in his early 40s, not as heavy, sported a full head of blonde hair, and possessed those cold gray eyes. "I'll pull my Explorer in front of you, and then we'll go," Jesse said, slamming the pickup's door shut. The motorcade made it to the morgue without incident, though Jesse couldn't help but notice the disgusted look on people's faces as it passed. Vanderkamp and James Earl were out of the pickup by the time Jesse got to their truck. "I take it James Earl is John's older brother," Jesse said.
"Half-brother,"
James Earl was quick to point out. Jesse had no doubt which half. James Earl looked even less genuinely upset by the death than his father. It seemed to Jesse that James Earl couldn't wait to get this over with, so he could find a place to get a morning drink. Jesse knew a drinker when he saw one or smelled one. James Earl wore too much cheap cologne, but it did little to cover up the stink of scotch sweat leaking out of his pores. "Only you two," Jesse said. The three of them walked in silence toward the building that housed the ME's office and the morgue. Being here reminded Jesse he should call Tamara. He hadn't had time to miss her since getting back into town, but he did miss her now. He stopped them just before they got to the front entrance. "Listen to me," Jesse said. "I've been through this process too many times with too many parents identifying their children. You may think you know what this is going to be like, but it's going to be harder than that. Be prepared. After you make the ID, I'll give you all the time you want with John." James Earl shook his head and made a face. If his father wasn't there, he'd have probably snapped his fingers and told Jesse to speed things up. "Come on, come on, let's get this over with." The elder Vanderkamp didn't exactly start weeping, but he was taking loud, exaggerated breaths. Jesse asked, "Ready?"
The father nodded. As they walked forward, the doors parted. Jesse got what he expected from each man. James Earl took one look at his half-brother's body and was ready to move on. But Leon Vanderkamp couldn't seem to stop staring at his son's body. While he didn't get weak-kneed or start wailing, he was definitely affected, probably more than he anticipated he would be. "I'll give you some time," Jesse said. "I'll be in the ME's office when you're ready." As he started down the hallway, James Earl caught up to him. "Listen, Sheriff Stone."
"Chief Stone."
James Earl rolled his eyes but made the right noises. "Sorry, Chief. Any place to get coffee in here? A vending machine or something?"
"Rough night?"
"You could say that." James Earl understood what Jesse meant and patted the right front pocket of his jeans. Jesse saw the familiar outline of a hip flask or small bottle. "No vending machine, but I know they've got a coffee maker in the break room. If you ask, I'm sure they'll brew some up for you."
"Want to share a cup, Chief?"
James Earl patted his pocket again.
"No thanks. Don't let me catch you driving under the influence in paradise."
James Earl winked and smiled as if they were members of the same brotherhood.
"Understood."
Jesse walked away, thinking that James Earl might be a way for him to keep tabs on things for as long as this mess lasted.